Welcome back to News and Views. I want to thank SM Energy, United States Oil and Gas Association, Independent Petroleum Association of America, the Western Energy Alliance, Colorado Oil and Gas Association, and EOG, as well as Whiting Petroleum for sponsoring this show. Joining us right now, Jack Ekstrom, and he's here with us, is Congressman Kevin Cramer. Congressman Cramer, good to have you on News.
Yeah, welcome to the Great White North.
What is up with this?
I don't know. That's heavier snow than I've seen.
Do you guys even own snow shovels out here?
Well, it's as you notice, it doesn't stick on the streets much, but if it does, God help you.
Yeah.
Yeah, get off. That's all I can tell you.
I was visiting some folks that have lived in D.C. a long time, and they were saying that, you know, it snows here. They can't figure out why the city can't figure out it does snow here and deal with it better.
It might be denial.
It isn't just the river in Egypt.
It's so much, yeah, right. It's so much easier just to abandon your car on the street and get it later.
Congressman, before we talk about the kind of the subject matter of the day, you know, congratulations. I think getting the Farm Bill passed was a major step.
Well, it was my highest priority. I think it's our entire delegation's highest priority. I didn't know it was so difficult. I should have, I guess, considering they weren't able to get it done the year before. It took a lot more gymnastics, if you will, than I thought it would. As you know, that first time it came back, came up to the floor, it did fail. One of the things, though, the Farm Bill taught me is how open the process is in the House. You know, we took up 103 amendments on the floor. This is after dealing with a couple hundred amendments in the committee, in the Ag Committee, when it came to the floor, 103 amendments. No, I'm glad to say one of them was mine and it passed, but there were several others that became problematic. So it's complicated. That's what led to, you know, well, when it failed that first time, that was the first time it really occurred to me that this stuff's not automatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is heavy lifting.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Now it's all about implementation.
It is.
Your staff, I mean, you're Congressman, you hold town hall meetings. You go and visit with the public. What are you hearing from about this?
Well, it's interesting because right now the anxiety is a great question because it's changed. Now that it's passed, it's changed. There's a little anxiety about what are the rules going to be because, as you know, this Farm Bill provides some choices for farmers, and they have the choices between, you know, did they go with revenue protection or do they go with, you know, the price protection, the more traditional things. You know, planting season's upon us. The FSA, who helps advise the farmers, are sort of in a holding pattern right now while USDA figures out the implementation of the rules. And so there's a little anxiety about that. And so what people are saying is, why is there a gag order on the FSA? I need to know now. And we're just saying, calm down. I think we're going to be able to get through the planting season. We're not going to let panic, you know, be the next problem that we deal with. So, people right now want to know what the rules are more than anything.
Well, and I know that, you know, we're sitting in the National Farmers Union office. Mark Watney, who I spoke to before I came out to D.C., said they're going to make the rounds. They're going to go around and try to explain it, and I'm sure other farm groups. And who'd you have in the office today? You said the Barley Boys.
The Barley guys.
Is anybody from North Dakota not out in Washington?
They're all out here. It's kind of cool, I have to say. But this is the time of the year now. They're starting this week when a lot of the groups come out for their, you know, winter and spring annual conferences. The students will start coming, the close-up students, pretty soon, and we'll start holding town hall forums with 16-year-olds on the Capitol steps. That's really fun. When John, Heidi, and I get together with 100 students from someplace in North Dakota, and we stand out there and bask in the glory of the sun and the shadow of the Capitol, and all these people from southern states walk by going, look at those dumb people. They're standing outside. They're not even wearing coats.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're cut a little different.
We're better.
Jack, the oil boys are out here as well right now. I mean, it's a full press on the Capitol.
It really is. After the recesses and holidays and all of that kind of stuff, it is time to try to get something done before the election. So we're here. We're telling our story, as are so many others who are in town. It's a critical part of what we do. And it's a critical part for, obviously, for the agriculture community, all of the segments. I mean, you were talking about the Barley Boys and all of the different the soybean guys and everybody, the equipment manufacturers and so forth. It's critical that our representatives understand our concerns, so that when they all come together here and they start making the sausages, they always do, that they understand that our ingredients in that sausage are pretty important.
Congressman, before you came, we were visiting with individuals who wanted to talk about development of minerals and resources on public lands. And they cited North Dakota as an example of a state that is pro-development on some of those public lands. How big of a push is that on the federal side?
It's really big, and a couple of reasons, Joel, for that. One is, and I'm very, you know, I'm pleased that the first bill that I actually introduced myself was House Resolution 767, which is a bill that was actually introduced by Senator Hoeven in the previous Congress. The House never took it up for some reason. So we were able to get it done. Both John and Heidi were on the bill in the Senate to streamline the process of permitting on federal lands and to include North Dakota in a pilot. Now, here's what's why I think the bill passed so easily. One libertarian voted against it in the House. Senate passed it unanimously. Is because it took in all the considerations of things like, for example, streamlining doesn't mean short-circuiting. It means putting all of the federal agencies under one roof in an office in Montana. So you have the Corps of Engineers, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the other Department of Interior offices, grasslands folks, along with the BLM and EPA, and they work together right there at the sites. And what has happened in previous pilots like this is over the course of 2 years, the permitting process was shortened by 25%. But this is what my friends on the left like. It also increased the review by 25%. So it's true government efficiency. Now, according to the Institute for Energy Research, the federal government of the United States owns about $23 trillion worth of minerals, oil and gas minerals. A lot of that's offshore. A lot of it's under federal lands. If we can find an efficient way to go about getting those minerals and producing them to the benefit not only of the economy but to the taxpayers of this country, we can do a lot of good things, catch up on a lot of things, not the least of which would be transportation infrastructure.
Jack, that's music to your ears.
That kind of efficiency is exactly what we've been advocating. Thank very, very deep gratitude and thanks to Congressman Kramer for getting that done because we've worked toward that, and why it was not taken up, I don't know. But when it's not taken up, it's a dead issue. The congressman got that activated and got it done. It's huge.
Well, we were talking some presidential politics earlier, Congressman Kramer, and one of the things we were talking about was, you know, there was a recognition that when it comes to the Department of Interior and some others, that there's really not going to be much change under the current administration.
Sure.
And so when it came to how some of this was going to go, they were talking about the folks from the Independent Petroleum Association and the Western Energy Alliance were saying, look, until 2016, we might not be able to change this, but we've got to lay that foundation earlier now. And I said to him, I said, what if Hillary wins?
Yeah.
I mean, what if she wins? How do you? And Kathleen said, well, it can't be worse than now. So clearly they were not fans of the Obama administration.
Well, there's optimism for you. Well, here's the thing, and this is why I think having North Dakota as a pilot on this program, the streamline program, is so important, I think is what you were getting to. What a great laboratory to demonstrate to the rest of the country, including those that are concerned about conservation and environmental protection, that you don't have to compromise one for the other, that the two can be in tandem. I've never advocated that we should have a 10 or 20 day permitting process on federal lands like we do on private land. Federal lands are owned by over 300 million people. There's more diligence required, right? And so, but we can do better. We can do better for everybody, both the environmental.
It shouldn't take over a year.
It shouldn't. Let
me ask this. You follow North Dakota very close, and Wayne Stengem's a friend of yours.
Yeah.
He's introduced a provision that takes a look at special places in North Dakota.
Sure.
Do you like it? Have you read it?
I haven't read it. I do know some of the details. I mean, I've read a lot about it. Obviously, I know it has a lot of people concerned. I suspect that when everybody reads it in its entirety and sits down at the table, some people are going to go, oh, it's not as bad as I thought. And maybe others are going to go, maybe we should have done this differently. He laid something out. He's trying to solve a problem. And, if you're going to lead, sometimes you lead with your chin. I don't know what the result will be. I do know that I'm such a big advocate of private property rights, and to the degree that it would infringe on private property rights, that's a problem. But to the degree that it, Joel, we're all in this together. We have to sort of go along together, and sometimes that means, sometimes it means making sausage. And maybe
I think that Wayne is responding to lots of calls.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think that there's a lot of people looking to the Industrial Commission and saying, wait a second, there are certain areas, you know, the battlefield in Kildare. I mean, there are places that instantly come to mind, and we probably shouldn't have a footprint there. If we do, we should discuss how the footprint is done.
But I've also noticed that in North Dakota, our corporate citizens have responded pretty well to those things as well. I mean, that when a situation is explained to a company, they've made pretty dramatic changes, somewhat to their own cost, but they're willing to do it to do business in our state.
Small example, but Heidi brought up just what you said right there yesterday by talking about in the Badlands. She talked about how there needed to be a parking lot, and the parking lot needed to be lit, and and the park ranger said, well, if we're going to do that, can we people like looking at the horizon in the sky, can we turn those lights down, have them? And the industry worked with it.
Yeah.
And she said today there's not a problem. Nobody's looking. And so that's really what you're
that's
getting
what
at,
I'm
Congressman.
About.
Let's take a little break, and then when we come back, let's do this. You always like taking phone calls, and Jack, you do too. Let's
you
open
bet.
It up. Let's let other people part of this. 1-800-880-5346. You have access to Congressman Kevin Cramer right now on 1-800-880-5346. Congressman Cramer, as far as the Keystone Pipeline Project, you're a supporter, right?
Oh, I am.
And somebody said that they want to suggest to you, this coming in by text at 35270, that we do not permit the Keystone Pipeline Project unless Canada agrees to not enter the Winter Olympics next time. I want to get your take on that.
I would rather get some concessions on taking our water. I'm going to negotiate with Canada, I'm going to negotiate over water.
We thought those two hockey victories were payback for not approving Keystone.
That could have been. I know that was. How much was that followed out here? I mean, how do you get time to do that with the busy schedule?
I wish I could, because I would be very interested. But of course, the Lamoureux twins are friends, and we know their family very well. And so for them, I mean, I was watching it very closely, because we just want those two Grand Forks girls to come home with gold. You know?
I know. And the one ended up in the box that went to the 5-3. And it's like, and all game long, they had just played their heart out.
Yeah.
They really had.
Yeah.
In terms of where we're at today, you and Jack were talking on the break about some tax legislation. And I know that Paul Ryan's a friend of yours. How big a hit did he take in the caucus for coming to a budget deal with Senator Murray, who's a Democrat on the, you know, your caucus has different fractions of it. You've got a very conservative wing. You know, so how much of a hit did he take in the caucus?
You know, it's interesting you put it that way, because he didn't take that much of a hit because, remember, a lot of this was positioned by the fact that, you know, there was the shutdown issue, remember, in October, and the continuing resolution. And I think there has been a growing realization by the conference that, you know, we're a divided government, we're a diverse country, we're not going to get everything we want every time. And for the most part, I think Paul did himself a lot of good within the conference, because one thing about Paul is he explains things extremely well. Now, you know, it tends to be fairly technical at times, but I think people bought off and saw it as leadership. Yeah, for the most part, I don't think he took a hard hit. But frankly, I was very glad to see it happen, because Paul was one of the people I had the hardest time convincing to support a farm bill. But when you looked at the farm bill, see that it has as much savings in it as the entire Ryan Murray budget agreement, I was able to say, listen, this is how divided government works, man. You take what you can get. You know?
Then let me ask the question kind of in a different way. If you look at, where the congressman's at, what in that bill, in the budget deal, once you got into the details, can you look at and say, you know what, we wouldn't have got that without the government shutdown? There are some wins in there for us as Republican members of the Congress.
Okay, great question. And if I have to search for some specifics, but probably the biggest thing, Joel, the biggest part in my view of the budget deal was that we were able to, first of all, put some mandatory spending cuts on the table and get them. Well, not great ones, mainly really relating to federal pension reforms, but also adding to the end. And I know some people think, well, that's well into the future, but adding mandatory spending cuts to the end means they're permanent, they're forever. And while you don't see them today, that's the area we need to get into if we're going to actually really deal with the debt. Now, we need to get into it bigger, but that was one first step. The other, probably the biggest thing, was the fact that along with getting the omnibus spending bill done and getting this budget bill done was the fact that we are both the House and the Senate, Republican and Democrat, committed to regular order this year, where we'll take up 12 different appropriations bills the way we're supposed to and pass them in the House and send them over to the Senate for their debate and hopefully have a process the way it's supposed to be. And we're seeing the beginnings of that just this week with, of course, Chuck Hagel and the White House putting out early, you know, at least trial balloon on the defense budget. And a lot of us are upset about it, but nonetheless, this is the way the process is supposed to work.
Congressman, I'll use the word maverick to describe it, but you took an alternative route to becoming a congressman. You didn't go to a convention that had supported you before, and you won.
Yes.
You won. I mean, you are a congressman from North Dakota, so the plan worked.
Yeah, right.
Now you've got a Republican convention coming up.
Yes.
I'm going to be at it. I'm going to be at both of them, making sure people like you get a chance to get out your views on in the political season what happens. What are you anticipating at that convention, having not sought their endorsement before?
I anticipate, you know, frankly, I anticipate a pretty welcoming crowd because most of them, especially the leadership at the district level as well as the state level, asked me to do it. They wanted this opportunity. They wanted, you know, they wanted to see it as a uniting front. Of course, you know, the House race is the head of the ticket this year, which is not that usual, I guess. I mean, it's usual every 6 years. But so that's part of it. I think they want to see a strong head of the ticket. And so they've warmed up to it. I also think, Joel, that over the course of the last year, people have warmed to the idea that they have a congressman that carries the banner, but also comes home, does the town halls, appears on the radio. I think that they're liking what they're seeing for the most part. I'm far from perfect. But no, I expect to be welcomed with open arms, quite frankly, quite enthusiastically.
Do you like the job?
You know, I like it most of the time. I tell you, it's such a great honor to represent North Dakota. I mean, Joel, as you know, it's the place to be. It's so interesting to carry that brand and have people ask about it. You know, it's fun to wake up every morning and knowing that my colleagues are all reading about us in the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, and they have something to say when they come to the floor. It's just really, really good to be part of, I think, an important task, if not a fun one.